Bay. WGBW 1590 AM Denmark. W250 CV Green Bay.
And always ABC streaming News, on the Civic
I'm
Media
Rhea Roy.
App.
A new controversy involving former President Trump. An Australian billionaire and member of Trump's Mar-a-Lago club, Anthony Pratt, informing special counsel Jack Smith that Trump told him secret information about America's nuclear submarines back in 2021, months after Trump left office. ABC News learning Pratt then shared the information with dozens of others. 75,000 Kaiser Permanente workers from California to Washington, D.C. are on strike for a third day.
Earlier this week, Acting Labor Secretary Julie Hsu was acting as a mediator between Kaiser and the unions, shuttling between them. At this point, talks have completely broken down at what could be just the first round of the largest healthcare worker strike in U.S. history.
ABC's Matt Gutman. A new government jobs report out this morning. Employers adding 336,000 jobs in September. That's far more than the 170,000 or so analysts were expecting. This is ABC News. This year's Nobel Peace Prize awarded to an imprisoned activist fighting oppression of women in Iran. Berette Rice-Anderson, chair of the Norwegian Nobel Committee.
Her brave struggle has come with tremendous personal cost.
Narges Mohammadi sentenced to 31 years behind bars. In Houston, a man held on $150,000 bond after his teenage son died.
Witnesses told police that Emilio Dominguez and his 13-year-old son Eli were taking drugs together, that they saw the man give a pill to his son. When the boy told his father that he wasn't feeling well,
he said, "I'll just sleep it off," and the next morning, that's when he called 911.
Harris County Assistant District Attorney Edward Applebaum says Eli was later pronounced dead.
This child who died did test positive from the initial toxicology with fentanyl in his system.
Along with other drugs, Emilio Dominguez is held now on charges of injury to a child in the death of his son. Jim Ryan, ABC News, Dallas.
Rena Roy, ABC News.
It's the most competitive sport for all to enjoy, and Milwaukee is even the capital for it. It's bowling, and the oldest bowling alley is in Wisconsin. Haller House is home to the two oldest sanctioned lanes in the U.S. and are still made of the wood installed in 1908. The building on West Lincoln in Milwaukee looks the same. Musicians Joe Walsh and Jack White have thrown a ball down those 115-year-old lanes. Now, can you guess the tradition that continues here to this day? A hot beef sandwich, just 25 cents. The pin still set by people? Swear, and you're tossed out. The answer coming up. The fifth and sixth generations run Haller House, so some odd history does remain, like bras hanging from the rafters. The alleys have even been featured in the Wall Street Journal and Sports Illustrated. So what's your guess about the continuing tradition? It's the pin still being set by people. No machines here. These stories make it a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
Find out what's going on in the world, the state,
and in your own backyard.
This is a Civic Media Network News Update.
It's 12:03. Good afternoon, I'm Terry Bell, and here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Wisconsin Assembly Speaker Robin Voss says he will not consider impeaching Elections Commission Administrator Megan Wolf until after a lawsuit that seeks to make clear whether Wolf is a lawful holdover in the position.
The idea is we're not impeaching somebody who's in the job lawfully. They're not there. So I think that's what the Senate acted on. They didn't confirm her. So that's the action that we're going to follow.
That's Voss speaking with Channel 27 in Madison. Voss says he thinks the legislature should be advancing a new name for the job instead of considering impeaching Wolf. Attorney General Josh Call is suing, asking a judge to declare that Wolf lawfully holds the job. Call argues there was no appointment before the Senate because the Wisconsin Elections Commission did not pass a motion to reappoint Wolf to the position. Wisconsin Congressman Scott Fitzgerald is throwing his support to Jim Jordan as the next U.S. House Speaker, becoming the first Wisconsin House member to make an endorsement. Senator Ron Johnson is also endorsing Jordan. Jordan and Majority Leader Steve Scalise are the only two declared candidates so far. Lawmakers are facing a new government shutdown deadline of mid-November after passing a continuing resolution last week. Jordan and Fitzgerald both opposed the CR. Scalise is likely to draw support from more mainstream Republicans, while Jordan's Freedom Caucus is more aligned with Trump. The timeline is uncertain, but House Republicans expect to meet Tuesday to vet candidates. Wisconsin dairy farmers and related businesses are looking for more places to sell their products. Brian Winnikens reports from the World Dairy Expo in Madison.
Jenny Wackerhauser of Ever.ag explains.
The European Union has grown their milk production similarly after COVID as the U.S. has, so we are competing with them every day for cheese.
That trend, she says, in the markets is likely to continue for a while. She says dairy export markets have also been impacted by the strong value of the U.S. dollar, and domestically, demand appears a bit stagnant. World Dairy Expo wraps up in Madison on Friday. I'm Brian Winnikens.
Republicans are trying to shut down events like the World Naked Bike Ride in Wisconsin. That's after authorities in Madison declined to press charges over a 10-year-old girl's participation in the event in Madison this summer. Pictures were posted on Facebook. Jeff Weingand is a Dane County Board supervisor from Sun Prairie. He spoke at a hearing on two state Senate bills yesterday.
I used to love going to the Dane County Farmers Market. I used to love walking around places like the Monona Terrace and State Street. I can no longer do those things with my family for fear of what my children will be exposed to.
The bills seek to make laws covering public nudity and children in particular consistent statewide. It's National Banned Books Week. Melissa Kay has more.
Every year at this time, librarians and educators get the word out about what books some groups are trying to keep out of the public's hands. Bookstore manager Jennifer Jubenville tells Channel 10 in Duluth that Banned Book Week calls attention to the importance of reading. Books get challenged by people who say their content is obscene, but Jubenville says banned books often have important messages that need to be heard. Melissa Kay, Civic Media News.
A new Marquette Law School poll says former President Trump has a 51-48 lead among registered voters nationwide, but President Biden has a 51-49 advantage among likely voters. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
For the Talk of Green Bay News, I'm Pete Schwaba. Here's what you need to know. The Coast Guard is looking for a man in the Fox River. The search started a little before 2 a.m. Wednesday morning near the mouth of Dutchman's Creek near the National Railroad Museum. It has since moved toward downtown Green Bay. Authorities say clothes were found near the suspected spot where the man went into the water. Several agencies have partnered up for the search. We'll keep you posted. A man is in custody after carjacking a woman and her 4-year-old daughter. Grand Chute police say the 31-year-old woman and her child were in a parking lot in the 4300 block of West Wisconsin around 7:30 p.m. on October 2nd. They were threatened by a 51-year-old man with a knife. The man kidnapped them and drove to various banks, forcing the mother to withdraw money. The woman and her daughter were able to escape in Nina and went to the police. The suspect was taken into custody after a coordinated effort by area police officials. The woman and her daughter were treated for non-life-threatening injuries. Taylor Swift's new boyfriend is not the only one recommending vaccines. Here with more is Civic Media's Melissa Kay.
Health officials are recommending vaccinations for the three viruses responsible for severe illness and hospitalizations. These include influenza or the flu, RSV, and COVID-19. They say individuals at highest risk include adults over the age of 60, people with chronic health conditions, young children, and people who are moderately to severely immunocompromised. Vaccines won't stop you from getting these viruses, but could lessen the severity of symptoms.
If your cell phone makes a strange sound today, don't panic. That's the Emergency Alert System and Wireless Emergency Alert Test, which happens today at 1:20 p.m. You'll receive a text from the Emergency Alert System. No action is needed. The notification will be heard on radio, TV, cable systems, and satellite radio as well. This is the third national WEA test. Tonight's Powerball jackpot is $1.2 billion. That's the third largest ever, and it'll go up slightly after I buy my ticket later. Good luck. Pete Schwaba, WGBW 97.9 News.
And now, your Wisconsin weather from Civic Media.
I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot with a look at your weather ahead. We kicked off the day on the sunny side. Now, as clouds thicken, the rain chances roll in with colder temperatures. Highs will only hit the mid-50s today and will quickly drop this late afternoon as a brisk wind hits us and gusts up to nearly 30 miles per hour out of the northwest. This is dragging in the true fall feel. After scattered showers move across the state today, bringing in a quarter of an inch of rainfall, we will be smacked with reality as temperatures overnight plummet into the mid and upper 30s. Tomorrow, highs will stay in the mid to upper 40s with a few sprinkles, then some low 50s on Sunday with a tad more sunshine. As we move into Sunday night, frost and freeze warnings and advisories will likely be issued into Monday morning. Have a fantastic Friday, Wisconsin. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot, Civic Media News.
The longest losing streak in the NFL finally comes to an end. Good afternoon, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. A stunner last night on Thursday Night Football. The Bears beat the Commanders in Washington. Final score, Chicago 40, Washington 20. That snapped a 14-game losing streak for the Bears dating back to last year. About an hour before the kickoff, the team learned of the passing of Hall of Fame linebacker Dick Butkus at the age of 80. Bears head coach Matt Eberflus after the game.
Just got out of the locker room. Guys did a nice job of sticking together. And let me digress for a second. My condolences to the Butkus family. I had several chances to visit with Dick. He's one of my idols growing up, being a linebacker. And we had some good talks.
Wide receiver DJ Moore with 3 touchdowns, 230 yards receiving, the second most in a game in Bears franchise history. In Green Bay, the Packers have practice today and tomorrow before flying to Las Vegas to face the Raiders on Monday Night Football. The Packers trying to figure out how to shut down now Raiders wide receiver Davante Adams. I talked to defensive back Jair Alexander.
I mean, you know, it'll feel good. It'll feel better with interception. You know?
Head coach Matt LaFleur.
I don't know if there's a lot to help against a player of that caliber. If he's not the best, he is certainly right there.
College football, the Badgers host the Rutgers Scarlet Knights. Kickoff at 11 a.m. tomorrow morning in Madison. Then next, the Badgers will face Iowa, followed by Illinois and Ohio State. Head coach Luke Fickell.
You know, we've got a stretch here. Nobody wants to talk about the stretch, right? We want to talk about what's coming up on Saturday, but this is the time, this is the stretch that we've got to make sure we're moving forward and doing the things that are going to give us a chance to be successful, not just this weekend, but continue to push forward for the next 8 weeks.
Baseball, the Brewers cleaning out the clubhouse, some for perhaps the last time, like pitcher Corbin Burns.
Just feel bad for all these guys that worked their butt off for all season, but and not even this season for the years just to get to this point.
And what if this was Craig Counsell's last year as manager, Christian Yelich?
I mean, he's been a huge part of why this place is the way it is now, I've spoke on it before the playoffs started, but I think you don't ever want to lose sight on, what this team's been able to accomplish the last 5 or 6 years. We haven't been able to take it the whole way and win a championship, but being in a small market and being a consistent winner and having a good competitive team every year that is either in the playoffs or we missed it by one game last year, it's tough to do. And he's a huge reason why this place is like that now, and he's built a great culture here. And I love playing for him. I hope that continues. And I think he's earned the right to take some time and make a decision for himself and his family. But yeah, man, I love him. I think he's an unbelievable manager, and he's done a great job.
That's the Brewers' Christian Yelich. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Wisconsin is facing an unprecedented threat, a constitutional crisis that would overrule the votes of nearly 2 million Wisconsinites who voted in the state Supreme Court election this past April. It's a threat made by some extremist Republicans who are desperate to overturn a fair and democratic election so they can hold on to power. Instead of focusing on the issues we really care about, they are threatening to illegally impeach Justice Janet Protasiewicz without evidence before she's even ruled on a single case. Removing Justice Janet Protasiewicz from office would threaten our democracy and overrule the will of the people. But it's not too late to protect your vote and stand up for the rule of law. Tell your state legislators not to overturn the results of an election. Tell them to oppose the illegal impeachment of Justice Janet Protasiewicz. Contact your state legislators at 1-800-362-9472, then visit defendjustice.us to learn more about how you can help stop the illegal impeachment of Justice Janet. Paid for by A Better Wisconsin Together Incorporated.
As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry.
It's the wild west of how students are using generative AI.
As educators, there's sort of 6 responses that we can have to these new tools. We could ignore it. Mm-hmm. We could ban it. We can try and outfox it. We can teach about it. We can actually teach it, or we can teach with it. I think the most exciting one, of course, is to teach with it.
As Goes Wisconsin with host Kristen Bry. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Here's your updated forecast. Chance for scattered thunderstorms this afternoon. Otherwise, cloudy skies. Daytime highs approaching 58. Winds out of the west, 10 to 20 miles an hour. Cloudy skies. Tonight, scattered rain showers likely. Lows dip down to about 40. Chance for scattered rain showers again. Tomorrow, highs level off around 54. Cloudy skies with a few peaks of sun. Dry with temperatures well below average Sunday and Monday, and highs in the low 50s. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Ray Miller. Right now, it's 59.
The Talk of Green Bay, 1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW programming is broadcast from the Bug Tussle Studios. Bug Tussle, keeping you connected to the world around you.
Turner is in studio today. Senator Nina Turner is a passionate advocate for progressive values and social justice, often celebrated as Senator Turner's dedication to creating positive change continues today as she serves as a senior fellow at the Institute of Race, Power, and Political Economy at the New School. Furthermore, Senator Turner is an accomplished author. We eagerly await the release of Wake Up America, an anthology to which she has made a significant contribution, set to launch early next year. This week, Nina Turner launched We Are Somebody, a labor support organization that works to amplify, organize, and fund the 21st century workers movement. Senator Turner, so excited to have you on today. How are you doing on this Friday afternoon?
It's great to be with you.
Elected by the 5th Congressional District, about 20 minutes away from here, give or take. So Waukesha is a little outside my neck of the woods, but it was, I don't want to say my political awakening, because I really think that was the 2016 campaign. I was still in college at the time. I was still figuring out my path in life, and I wasn't necessarily as engaged as I would have liked to have been at the time. But Senator Sanders' campaign was kind of that immediate moment where it was like, yes, this is important. This matters. I need to do this right now. And if I don't start to get involved now, who will? Mm-hmm. Right? Like, I hate to say this because it's really cliche, but if there's a problem, who's better to solve it than yourself? Because nobody else is going to come out and fix these problems for you. Somebody that I respect a lot, I made this joke earlier, so I'll make it again. I heard their presentation yesterday on democracy not fixing itself. They did a phenomenal, phenomenal job. To those listening at home, if you get an opportunity, you might want to check out Senator Turner's presentation yesterday in UW Green Bay as part of the Harvey K. Speaker Series, where she discussed democracy and how it wasn't going to fix itself. But Senator, I want to jump to you now to talk about We Are Somebody, a new worker rights-focused initiative you just launched as the resurgent labor movement in the United States continues to grow. Please discuss how you plan to approach this and how you plan to really make a difference.
Thank you for the opportunity to join you. I'm so excited to be in the great state of Wisconsin. As you noted, I was in Green Bay before, and now to be a little bit outside of Milwaukee is a beautiful thing. We Are Somebody launched this week. It is a capacity-building organization for working-class people, both unionized and un-unionized. unionized workers, because we know the majority of workers in this country are not unionized, but we need the power and the reflection of those unionized workers who are out there on the front lines right now demanding better benefits, wages, and work conditions to shake things up for everybody else. And as labor, as the House of Labor, and I use the House of Labor broadly, but I know sometimes when people hear that, they think just unionized worker. But the House of Labor, just more broadly, has so much power. And to me, that really is the best space for us to come together based on what we have in common. And what it is right now is that this economy is immoral, and it is not working for the vast majority of the workers in this nation. And so we are somebody who's going to serve as a bridge. We're going to raise enough money to have a robust strike fund, because strike funds are important to be able to give workers the leverage that they need to hold the line. And William, I will say, you know, I've been thinking about this for a while, but what really cemented this for me is watching the coal miners in Alabama strike for almost 2 years. And it was over 1,000 of them, and they went out on strike, and they had a robust strike fund. And I had never, you know, I didn't really know that much about strike funds before that. And I know that that was what they were able to use to help their members hold the line. But unfortunately, the owners of the mine waited them out, and so they depleted a lot of the strike funds, and morale went down. So they ended up going back to work without a contract. But I was so inspired by their courage to get out there and say that we demand better. And we see that happening all over the country, this kind of solidarity summer.
Hot labor summer.
Hot labor summer. I used to say hot labor summer, but I don't use it anymore, because I was told that the farm workers don't like the term hot labor because they're out there in the hot sun.
In the literal sense.
So even though it's catchy, and I think it's simple, when I was told that by someone who works very closely with them, I stopped using hot labor summer. But I got you, though.
That makes a lot of sense, yeah. You know, we've been making that joke a lot. I always make the joke that hot labor summer is like the Hotel California. Mm-hmm. You can check out, but you can never leave.
Yes.
It's here to stay. And,
yes.
You know, from an employer's perspective, I think they see it as a bit of a Pandora's box. Once you let it, you know, once labor recognizes their power, you can never, you know, it can never be put away.
That's right.
People understand, wait a minute, when we do this, when we work together, when we collectively organize and bargain for a better workplace, we are able to accomplish great, great things. I think I love the way that you phrased it actually yesterday, where you say, when ordinary people put a little bit extra into their ordinary lives, the extraordinary can happen. Like, it's so simplistic, but it's so, like, it's the kind of thing that I'd put on a t-shirt and be like, yeah, Senator Nina Turner told me to say this, and I'd be excited, because it motivates regular working class people to recognize, like, wait a minute, I do have the ability to make a difference. I can change my communities. I can change my workplace. I can change my life, both for myself, my family, my friends. We can do these kind of things to make a difference. I brought up a graph, and it's really interesting, Nina, because, like, we're very well aware, people who follow this closely know that the numbers, if you were to look at a graph on, you know, union membership compared to income inequality, in the 1950s, for example, union membership was at 35-ish%, the highest that it's been in probably United States history, would be my guess. And share of income going to the top 10% was slightly below union membership. Now, since then, union membership has plummeted. It's around 10%. Share of income going to the top 10% is up to nearly 50%. Those numbers have skyrocketed, but the union difference, particularly amongst what would be considered. So I have median weekly earnings for full-time workers in 2019, according to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics here. Union individuals earned $1,095 per week, while non-union, $892. Those numbers were similar for men, for women, about 16% increase for union for pay for members of unions that were men, about 29% for women. And if you look at all racial demographics as well, white people, 19% increase median income per week if you were in the union. African Americans were at 26%, Latinos 39%, immigrants 25%, and young people 19%. Something that, you know, I talk about a lot as a youth organizer. Young people, and actually you did a fabulous job talking about this yesterday, They're so busy because they're so concerned about putting food on the table and a roof over their head. They don't have the extra energy, the extra time, the ability to go out in their communities and do things that they know will make a difference because they're struggling on themselves. You use the analogy from an airplane, right? When the mask comes down, you got to put your own mask on before you can take care of anybody else. Mm-hmm. And we're seeing this with communities across the country that are starting to recognize how impactful the labor movement can be for them. And we actually have a soundbite from the We Are Somebody launch. Aaron, could we play that?
Everybody is somebody. Most people want the ability to afford housing, healthcare, provide for their family, and be able to take a vacation every now and then. While most corporations are seeing record profits, they aren't leading to record wages. Imagine that. CEO pay has skyrocketed over 1,000% since 1978. CEOs are paid 399 times as much as a typical worker. Workers deserve better. From the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. supporting sanitation workers in Memphis, to Fannie Lou Hamer's work for Black farmers in the South, to Asa Philip Randolph's work organizing the Brotherhood of Sleeping Car Porters and organizing the March on Washington, the fight for liberation has always been a fight for workers' rights. It is in this robust tradition that I am launching We Are Somebody, a capacity-building organization for the working class. Our first major initiative will be to put our full support behind the 21st Century Workers Movement. We Are Somebody aims
to serve.
Another
quote that I like to use that kind of fits in that same vein is, democracy is a verb, not a noun, right? It's an action that needs to be taken every single day to preserve itself because power is never freely given, right? How do we as regular working class Americans kind of take advantage of the growing labor movement and use it in a way that will benefit all of us rather than even simply just members that are unionized versus non-unionized?
Yeah, that is greatly important that we see workers as an entire group. I often say, unless you got a sugar daddy, a sugar mama, or sugar somebody, you work for a living. If you don't have a trust fund, you are working for a living.
You either own capital or
right,
you work
or
for
you
capital.
You work for a living, and no shade, because I certainly have had trust fund people support efforts of mine because they know that things have gone really off the rails. But workers have to see themselves as a collective, whether they're unionized or not. And that is the beautiful thing about We Are Somebody, because we are here to amplify and lift and organize and fund the voices of workers. Now, certainly it's easier to galvanize people who are already in a union because they're already in an organized structure already. But it is vitally important as we fight for life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness to see workers all together, whether they're unionized or not. And a point that you made, William, about, you know, you gave the stats about how unionization has gone down in the United States of America. At the same time, the American public's support for unions has gone up. And it's among all demographics, and it is a beautiful thing. And I think one of the reasons why is because people see themselves very much in those union workers. When you see unionized workers taken to the picket line, it's important that our listeners understand that this is an act of sacrifice. They are at their wits' end. I mean, this is it. This is the straw that broke the camel's back, because to ask people who are of working class to stop working, to stand, so it's a lot. It's a lot.
Oh, thank you so much. And we're going to be continuing this conversation. We have Senator Nina Turner in studio with us today. We are talking We Are Somebody and the resurgent labor movement. If you have any questions or comments for the senator, please give us a call, 844-967-2789. We'll be right back.
From the home of the frozen tundra, Green Bay's choice for news talk, 1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW.
ABC News, I'm Arielle Reshef. Employers added nearly twice as many jobs in September than projected, but not in line with the Federal Reserve's goal to help lower inflation. At the White House, President Biden still touting the robust report and the unemployment rate steady at 3.8%.
We have the highest share of working-age Americans in the workforce in 20 years. And it's no accident. is Bidenomics. We're growing the economy from the middle out, the bottom up, not the top down.
Multiple strikes continue in several key industries. The United Auto Workers strike is heading into its fourth week. The Hollywood actors strike is nearing 3 months. And the largest healthcare workers strike could spill into November if talks between union members and Kaiser Permanente don't resolve discrepancies on pay raises and staffing concerns. It's day five of the civil fraud trial involving former President Trump's family business, alleging he inflated values on his company properties. This is ABC News.
The Talk of Green Bay, 1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW programming is broadcast from the Bug Tussle Studios. Bug Tussle, keeping you connected to the world around you.
For the Talk of Green Bay News, I'm Pete Schwabe. Here's what you need to know. The search on the Fox River for a 21-year-old Green Bay man has been suspended by the Coast Guard. The search for Victor Torres Guadalupe started about 2 a.m. on Wednesday, but authorities decided they didn't have enough evidence showing he had entered the water. They are asking for the public's help in finding him. He is 5'10", about 155 pounds, has black hair and brown eyes. Anyone with helpful information should call the Green Bay Police Department. The man who created the G logo on Packer helmets has died. John Gordon designed the iconic G while he was an art student at St. Norbert College in the early 60s. He was asked to design a logo that resembled a football by a St. Norbert equipment manager. He passed away Saturday at the age of 83 after struggling with Alzheimer's. Tonight's Powerball jackpot is $1.2 billion. That's the third largest ever, and it'll go up slightly after I buy my ticket later. Good luck. Pete Schwabe, WGBW 97.9 News.
Are record energy costs putting a squeeze on your fixed or limited incomes? With inflation rising at record levels and incomes not keeping pace, you might be one of tens of thousands of Wisconsin residents who are struggling to survive in the blistering heat of summer or the bitter cold of winter. While you haven't asked for it, the Keep Wisconsin Warm Cool Fund and your local energy assistance providers are here to help. No Wisconsin resident should ever have to face the challenge of living without heat or power or face homelessness. For a hand up, apply today and call 1-800-506-5596 or visit www.kwwf.org. That's 800-506-5596 or visit www.kwwf.org.
As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry.
David Drake is a professor and the Extension Wildlife Specialist at UW-Madison. Greg, tell him what you call him.
I now refer to you as Jane's birder boyfriend.
It wouldn't be the first time.
Whoa!
Now I have competition.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Oh, God, I am wounded.
As Goes Wisconsin with host Kristen Brock. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. It's never personal, only politics. The Devil's Advocates Radio Show with Dom and Crute. Weekdays from 4 until 6 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Take the show with you on the go. Download the Civic Media app. You can engage with us right from the app. You can call, you can text, you can connect with Town Call. Head over to the Apple App Store or Google Play Store. Type in Civic Media. It's free and it's easy to download. We are joined on this Friday afternoon by Senator Nina Turner. And Senator, we were talking solidarity as the lead-in, so aptly covered for us. You are on a roll. I'd like to get back to allow you to finish that thought.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, just mainly that all workers have to see themselves in within one another, that we're all indelibly linked. And some people may be blessed enough to be, you know, at the top of the economic strata in terms of how much money they make. Some people are solidly in the middle, and some some people are at the bottom of that, but unless you are extraordinarily wealthy, we're all one health scare, one major incident away from being in ruin. And that is why it's so important that we are, that we take these movements as a unit, seeing ourselves in UAW workers, seeing ourselves in Amazon and Starbucks and Kaiser. I mean, Kaiser, the largest strike of healthcare workers, is going on right now. Writers have a contract, but the actors and actresses are still out there on strike. We have to see ourselves as a collective in order to move this nation in the direction that it needs to go. And, you know, one of my conversations with Dr. Harvey Kay as we were driving down here, that movements are really important, but ultimately those movements have to be connected to some type of policy change. So let's think the New Deal. You know, President FDR said, make me do it.
It's been
done. And then policy followed that. Think about the civil rights movement as African-American citizens in this country were demanding access to the ballot box. It was movement, and then policy followed. The PRO Act right now in our lifetime, right? Movements are making that happen, but now no action has happened yet in that Congress, but that's kind of how I want people to think about this.
Well, and we have a really recent example, too, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, because this is something that we've talked about with Professor Shelton when he's on for Thursday office hours, and that is, of course, President Joe Biden was on the picket line, the first time in United States history that a sitting president has appeared on the picket line. And I'm a big proponent of giving credit where credit's due. He was there. That's big. That's monumental. But like you just said, he wasn't there out of the goodness of his heart. He was there because public pressure has demanded it. 75%, I believe, was the last numbers that I saw. A super majority of Americans support the UAW over the automakers in their fight against big three corporate greed. This is something, there was even a CNN poll. If the major mainstream media outlets are making their headlines and phrasing stories in a way that is positive for the workers' perspective, because, you know, these major media outlets, they're not doing this out of the goodness of their hearts either. They want ratings. They want to increase advertising revenue, and they do that by having eyes and ears on their show. Eyes and ears come to their show when they see things that they agree with. The working class and the American people are siding with labor now, and that is forcing some of these elected officials to show up, their part, and be on the line themselves.
No, you're right about that, and you're right about giving credit where credit is due. I'm not sure if viewers and people who are listening certainly couldn't see it, but I'm kind of like, yeah, but you hit the nail on the head. You said what I was going to say, which is, yeah, he was forced to do it. You know, shout out, big ups to President Sean Fain of the UAW and his members, 145,000 strong. He would not be able to show the strong force that he is showing without the support of his union. And one of the things that he has done that other labor leaders have either been too afraid to do or didn't think about doing, which is he challenges the political status quo. When he was asked, why haven't your union, you know, for example, endorsed President Biden? He said, we're not endorsing. And I think that was, along with the stats that you just laid out, his willingness to stand up for his workers above political expediency is what drove President Biden to the picket line. It's also what drove a former president, Donald J. Trump. We know that he did not go to a union facility. He went to a private facility, but he was still among workers. Mm-hmm. And so if I could make another point, I know we're going to make a whole lot of points before our time ends, is that I want people to see us together and not think about non-union workers as somehow as less than. Now, President Trump is a faux populist. We got that. But it is that synergy and energy that even drove him to be phony about it. But he went to see workers. He represented as though he was going to see unionized workers. He didn't. Got it. We'll check that off the list, Williams. But he did go see workers. And that is the most important thing. So the people are pushing these politicians to do the right thing. And really, if we think about all great movements of consequence in this country, when you dig a little deeper, that's always been the case.
Mm-hmm. No, it's always about public pressure.
That's it.
I love using the FDR quote, make me do it.
Make me do it, baby.
I Googled it because I love to read back on the history of some of these. Yeah. And there are, you know, whispers, oh, this has never been officially documented. It's a myth. It's just a rumor. But either way, the point stands.
That's right.
The point still stands. Elected officials, if they are going to serve their constituents, the constituents need to be the ones coming out and saying, this is what we expect of you. You either do it or we're going to replace you. It's a conversation I have with my friends all the time. And I'm going to defer, of course, to your speech yesterday in Green Bay because it was so on the nose where we talked about political apathy, particularly amongst young people. And you noted that, you know, you don't have patience for people who don't vote. With the caveat that, you know, of course, we need to take the time to listen to them and hear why don't you vote. And a lot of times it's because they don't see a difference.
That's
they see
exactly
two
right.
corporatist wings of the same bird. What does it matter if I vote or not? Because it's not going to change my life. Now, there's a couple ways you could express that. You know, the argument that I've heard from a couple of people would be that it's a privileged stance to take in the sense that tangible harm that are happening to communities if you vote one way or the other and you are able to distance yourself from that means that you're kind of protected. But the other side of that is if your life experience is that it doesn't matter which way you vote because nothing changes, why would you be incentivized to change your rituals, your habits, your routines, knowing it's not going to change anything for you in the long run? And I think that's, in my opinion, the biggest problem with the Democratic Party is that when you have opportunities to take a bold stance and enact bold legislative change that will make a fundamental difference in the material conditions of American lives, they have instead kind of chose not to because
yeah, it's a failure.
Decorum or, you know.
It's just an epic failure.
I don't know.
It's at a certain point, we just got to call it what it is. And it is an immoral economy. They know it. Republicans know it too. But I'm going to put Republicans in the parking lot for a minute, William, because you brought up the Democrats. The PRO Act should have passed when President Biden had control of both chambers, because there was a period, first 2 years of his candidacy, where he did. Democrats had the opportunity to increase the minimum wage. It has been for 14 years now at $7.25. As you recall, and many of your listeners may recall, they blamed it on the parliamentarian of the Senate. That is a non-position, really. They could fire the parliamentarian and do what they need to do to really, again, change material conditions.
Nobody wants to be held accountable. It's something we talk about all the time. Yeah. Accountability doesn't exist in the modern world.
Yeah, and the latter thing that you, unless the people force it to happen, but the latter point that you made about voting, the part about people are not seeing material change, that is where we must rest, because it is logical, even though I might not like it, for somebody to say, I've been voting, and nothing is changing for me. Nothing changes for Big Mama and Big Papa in the hoods where they misunderstood, whether it's urban hoods, rural hoods, or suburban hoods. Nothing is changing for me. So why do you keep asking me to vote? That is a logical position.
Mm-hmm.
Where I have my angst is what I said to the students at Green Bay yesterday, which is the skin that I occupy. And when I think about what my forebearers, even those who are still alive today, walking, and then those who've gone on to the ancestral plane, I just don't have that luxury to say that I'm not going to vote because I owe them so much more than I could ever repay.
Mm-hmm.
So voting is the least I can do.
Yeah, and that's something that we talk about all the time. And you know, if we want to make the conversation about democracy being a verb, the bare minimum would be go out and vote. I don't know about you, Senator, but I will never have a say in who's on the board of directors for a Fortune 500 company, all right? But I do get to pick who my elected officials are. And if I don't like who my elected official is, I can organize people in my communities. We can go out and we can elect somebody new. But I will never be able to pick the new CEO of whatever big three motor company. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
So, like, there's a lot of the private versus public argument that, you know, because I'm in the Wild County, so I come from more rural conservative areas. I hear a lot of young people saying there as well, like, oh, well, the government messes everything up. Perhaps that's by design in some situations. If you're attempting to privatize everything, it makes sense to try to make the public sector as inefficient and ineffective as possible. But at the end of the day, we get to choose who represents us in the public sector. We will never have that opportunity in the private sector. And if you're not making your voice heard, I hate to sit here and say I don't want to hear you complain, because I think that's rough.
Yeah, it is. I mean, there's a part of me that feels that way too, but maybe it is the activist in me, the teacher in me, maybe it's the mama in me. As I've been able to travel this country for two presidential elections in support of Senator Bernie Sanders, of which you were a delegate in 2020, we watched what neoliberals are willing to do to stop progressives, but I put that in the parking lot. in a way, I get saying if you don't vote, then don't complain. But on the other end of that, I also get, for the reasons that we're talking about, why people are so frustrated that they just, of all the litany of things that they have to do.
Apathy makes sense.
That's
at this
it.
Point.
It absolutely does. Now, do I like it? No. Will I continue to try to get people to understand that I want them to go to the ballot box, even if they're mad as hell? Just go. Go frustrated. Just go. But voting in and of itself is not the only thing that can get us change. And I think we have to start teaching that lesson, too, because so often people, you know, just say, oh, go vote and everything's going to change. No, everything's not going to change instantly with your vote. It's just one part of a larger process of participating in our larger democracy.
You talked about this in regards to education yesterday. You said education's not a panacea. Neither is voting. This is not an end-all, be-all remedy to all the situation or all the ailments that American society is currently facing. Yeah. You need to be on the ground organizing, whether it's within your workplace, whether it's within your community, whether it's on the streets, in your schools, wherever it may or may not be. Our strength is in our numbers. That is the only advantage that we have over the ultra-wealthy, their That's influence, right. their connections, their money. We can't compete with that, though. The Sanders campaign showed that you can crowdfund a national campaign if you have enough support. But conceptually, the only advantage that we really have is our numbers, our strength, each other.
Yeah, that is it.
And there was another great quote from you, and I'm glad you mentioned neoliberalism, because we've seen, you know, essentially American economic policy has been predicated on this idea going back to, you know, the 60s or 70s, Republicans and Democrats alike. And you said that neoliberalism kills slowly, neo-fascism kills quickly. It reminds me of an argument I made in the 2020 election, essentially referring to why I supported Joe Biden, because I got a lot of flack for that at the time. Sure. And I was like, well, that buys us 4 more years. It buys us 4 years to organize at the ground level. It buys us 4 years to connect with people in our communities, to be able to build the kind of relationships we need to sustain a long-term systemic change in the country. And that's not afforded to us if we go with Donald Trump. And that immediately came to mind when I heard you drop that quote. What did you mean by that?
Yeah, I mean, that's basically it. You explained it. I know, but I will also say, at a point that gets exhausting. At a point, people are going to say, okay, I'm over it. Because every time the sky's falling, every time I got to pick between the lesser
boy who cries wolf.
Yeah, at a point, it's going to be exhausting. I don't think that the argument that Democrats used in 2020 vis-a-vis Donald Trump is the worst thing possible to happen to this country, therefore he should not be reelected, is not going to work in 2024. And we're going to see people say, I'm not, this dog doesn't hunt anymore. And I think they're right about that. What is it that the Democrats could and should have been doing all along? Why is it that Republicans go hard after what they want, William, whether they got consensus, they not trying to be bipartisan. They use their energy and synergy in a way that disadvantages the average American, but they use it. And Democrats are not willing to do the same thing. So I think we're going to see a big shakeup in 2024, especially since Dr. Cornel West is now running as an independent and Robert F. Kennedy is flirting with running as an independent.
Yeah, this I'm not excited for this 2024 cycle. I'm exhausted. But we're going to continue the conversation with Senator Nina Turner. This is Town Call on a Friday afternoon. We'll be right back.
It's the most competitive sport for all to enjoy, and Milwaukee is even the capital for it. It's bowling, and the oldest bowling alley is in Wisconsin. Holler House is home to the two oldest sanctioned lanes in the U.S. and are still made of the wood installed in 1908. The building on West Lincoln in Milwaukee looks the same. Musicians Joe Walsh and Jack White have thrown a ball down those 115-year-old lanes. Now, can you guess the tradition that continues here to this day? A hot beef sandwich, just 25 cents. The pins still set by people? Swear and you're tossed out. The answer coming up. The fifth and sixth generations run Holler House, so some odd history does remain, like bras hanging from the rafters. The alleys have even been featured in the Wall Street Journal and Sports Illustrated. So what's your guess about the continuing tradition? It's the pins still being set by people. No machines here. These stories make it a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry.
We had a little chat with management yesterday, and I did suggest a daily limo and a fruit plate.
How'd they take that?
That didn't seem to take that seriously for some reason.
I have full faith in you. You've been doing this for a long time. And you have Greg Bach.
I got a call from management this morning saying if I'd be interested in taking on new roles as a driver and buying fruit plates. That's a career opportunity.
Put that on your resume, baby.
Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Here's your updated forecast. Chance for scattered thunderstorms this afternoon. Otherwise, cloudy skies. Daytime highs approaching 58. Winds out of the west, 10 to 20 miles an hour. Cloudy skies. Tonight, scattered rain showers likely. Lows dip down to about 40. Chance for scattered rain showers again. Tomorrow, highs level off around 54. Cloudy skies with a few peaks of sun. Dry with temperatures well below average Sunday and Monday, and highs in the low 50s. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Ray Miller. Right now, it's 60.
Mino and the Mayor in the morning, and the talk of Green Bay all day long. 1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW.
Hallelujah, it's Friday.
Welcome back. This is Town Hall, a brand new approach to homegrown radio. If you'd like to participate in today's forum, give us a call or shoot us a text, 844-967-2789. I am so excited to be joined by Senator Nina Turner on this Friday afternoon. We are talking We Are Somebody and the resurgent labor movement across the United States. And actually, because I'm fanboying a little bit, we're also talking about Nina's presentation yesterday at UW Green Bay, because she was, in her words, a quote machine, but that is completely accurate. And there were so many relevant topics that I think needed to be said and need to be heard by the majority of not just people in Wisconsin, but in the United States, as we talk about the importance of organizing together, solidarity, working as a team amongst working class Americans to accomplish not only our goals for the short term, but for the long term. If you want to talk, you know, climate change, if we want to have a habitable environment for our young people to grow up in, if you want to be able to afford childcare, which is a big issue in the state of Wisconsin right now, if you want to be able to afford college for those children eventually, if you want to be able to afford rent, something that, you know, I hear from young people all the time as I'm organizing is we don't necessarily think we can afford kids. We can't afford to take care of ourselves, let alone the futures of somebody else. But there was a couple of ideas in particular that you touched on that I think were really, really noteworthy that I wanted you to kind of elaborate a little bit on, and that's forgetting labels, right? Titles are a way that society deems you worthy of being heard. You accomplished X, Y, and Z, therefore your opinion matters and other people should have to listen to you. And I love the analogy you used, which was basically titles just get you in the door. Once you're in the door, you need a purpose to drive you and the movement forward. Could you elaborate on what you mean and how regular people can kind of find that purpose?
That's it. Titles are good, but purpose is better. So you definitely do need the title because of how we're wired as a society. But if you have somebody with a fancy title and they have no purpose, what difference does it make? And this is a good segue, William, for me to Fannie Lou Hamer, a sharecropper from Mississippi, a civil rights leader, was born today in 1917. And you want to talk about a woman who did not have a fancy title, but she had a whole lot of purpose. Mm-hmm. And it is because of her. She led the Mississippi Freedom Democratic Party, which was really the coming together of poor blacks and poor whites to fight against the Democratic machine in Mississippi, in the South. And we know that the Democrats at that time, my brother who's conservative would argue it's the same thing is happening, but certainly the Democrats of that time stood in the way of black people being able to vote. I'm using her as an example, not just because the opportunity to recognize today is her birthday, but here's a woman who was a sharecropper. She got thrown in jail. She was beaten in jail. She was sterilized, all kinds of things that we don't have time to talk about. She didn't have the fanciest of title, but she had purpose. She was driven by justice. She shut down. I mean, President Lyndon Baines Johnson was so afraid of this woman that during a Democratic convention, he called a fake press conference to try to mute the words that she was going to say about the racism that was streaming through Democratic Party. So what the pivotal point is that, yes, we need people with titles, but we need them to have purpose above the title. When they get in the room, are they fighting for health care? Are they fighting for child care? Are they fighting for, the household labor? Are they fighting for paid family leave? Are they fighting against climate chaos? I mean, just fill in the blank. If they're not, if they just all giddy about being in the room, we don't need them. Mm-hmm. We got to put people in there who actually are going to utilize that title to the benefit of the people.
And we see a lot of elected officials. You get the title based on where you grew up, and I shouldn't say where you grew up, but like connections being the most important aspect of all of this. You got your Ivy League degree because your father went to school there and you get handed some big time corporate job. America has this weird mentality of, sorry to everybody else, I got mine. So these people, they earn their titles and they earn the nice paycheck that comes with the title, and they feel that in and of itself means success, because we've been kind of trained in America that your value is how much money you make, what title you have, how other people can look to you and see the purchases you're able to make and that kind of thing. But what I'm hearing from you is, and I agree with this completely, nothing's going to change if those are the individuals that are still given these positions of power because they don't want to do anything with the power except maintain it.
Yeah, I mean, and the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. warned us about the excesses of materialism, but we are wired that way. We're consumer economy, 70% of it, but we do have the ability to rethink what success really means. What does true love really mean? What does compassion really mean in the context of what he would call the beloved community?
That reminds me of another quote of yours yesterday. You can use your power to pull up or push down.
Yeah, Booker T. Washington. There are two ways of exerting one's strength. One is by pushing down and the other is by pulling up. And you know what? Anybody can pull up. You don't have to have a fancy title to do that.
Mm-hmm. And that's why we advocate so much for getting involved in your community.
Yes.
Title or not.
Come on.
People respect authenticity. They respect real. There's an argument to be made that everything in America is so commercialized now. It's so fake. It's so edited. Instagram influencers are the first thing that come to mind in that regard.
Yes.
That if you're able to present, this is who I am. This is what I stand for. This is what I believe. And this is why you should care about these issues. Those who think like you are going to be drawn to that. And perhaps we're able to build the movement out of that kind of energy because we're seeing that. You mentioned Sean Fain. He's done such a wonderful job because he's been different.
Yeah.
He's changed the script on how organized labor approaches some of these battles. There's, of course, the famous leaking of the wrong plants that I find absolutely hilarious story.
Yeah.
But it's kind of using the powers that be against themselves. They think that they're better than us. They're smarter than us.
Oh,
they're more knowledgeable than us. Ha ha ha. These fools leaked this information, so we're going to prepare accordingly. Nope. We set you up for that.
Oh, yeah. He let them know. And Christian Smalls, too. Let me throw him out there. Amazon labor union. Staten Island was fired for trying to organize the workers there, doing a phenomenal job of galvanizing Amazon workers all across the country. You need that kind of raw leadership. That those things are important. Sarah Nelson, who leads the airline workers. I mean, that is the, and on and on. I mean, I'm barely scratching the surface, but you got to have leaders who have a vision to provide provision for the people and who have the heart of the people number one on their list. And the leaders that I just named, and there are others within the House of Labor, they center the people who they are in service to.
We are in a very unique position right now that, we're at a kind of a fulcrum in modern society. Which direction are we going to take this with AI evolving incredibly quickly, with labor itself on the brink? What are we going to do? Are we going to find these strong leaders and being able to jump behind them? Or are we going to capitulate to the demands of the wealthy? So thank you so much for joining us today, Senator Nina Turner. I want you to give a shout out to We Are Somebody.
Where can we find you? Yes, wearesomebody.org. Please go visit, get involved. And you always, Nina Turner on Twitter, Nina Turner Ohio on the gram. Just find me and you can find We Are Somebody.
I am chronically online. We make jokes about this pretty frequently, but Senator Turner is one of the best national Twitter accounts that I follow. She does such a wonderful job kind of contextualizing the importance of these issues and why they matter. So thank you so much for joining us today, Senator. We're going to be back on Monday with another wonderful episode of Town Call. Hope everybody has a great, great weekend. Take it easy, party people.
We'll see you then.
For
Football season is back, and no matter which home team you root for, there's one thing everyone in the Midwest can agree on. If you're tailgating or grilling at home, nothing beats a freshly baked Village Hearth bun. An old-fashioned hot dog bun is the perfect accompaniment for a brat or a hot dog and all the toppings your little heart desires. And for the best burgers, you just can't beat the Village Hearth classic bun. So head to the store and pick up some Village Hearth buns. The weekend is almost here.
Sometimes I just cannot believe all the storms we've gone through here.
I can only hope that we'll be able to leave this house to you one day, baby. You're our legacy.
Planning for these disasters will make sure we're safe, and is the best way to protect that legacy.
Protect your legacy. Visit ready.gov/plan for the tools and tips you need to start your emergency preparedness plan today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay. WGBW 1590 AM Denmark. W250 CV Green Bay. And always streaming on the Civic Media